Hi, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. Today's episode features Major Cassandra DeJesus. Major DeJesus is the Corps and Community Missions Secretary in the area of revitalization. She joins us to share more about her ministry in the Salvation Army and to open discussion on some important topics facing us today. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, Major Cassie DeJesus. Welcome to the Prepared Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're so happy to have you join our podcast conversation.
Thank you.
Now, I've known you for quite a while, probably since we were teenagers. I remember you from CMI back in the 90s.
Well, that's where I met you and I think Lisa McCarty.
Yes. I think we all were in like the same cabins.
Probably.
And to our listeners, CMI is the Central Music Institute, which is a territorial camp in the Salvation Army that I've made some of my best friends out of experiences like that in those camps.
I was a band geek, so yeah.
Yeah.
CMI was definitely the place to be.
It was. And CBLI, Central Bible and Leadership Institute as well. Well, but I'm glad that we get to see each other almost every day here at THQ working with you. Now it's fun to get reacquainted.
Yes. We now have kids and we get to talk about that. Mine are at a different stage, but get to talk about our kids and family life and married life. So
yeah,
it's good to reconnect with you on a different level.
It is. I also really wanted to have you on today to tell our listeners not only about your ministry in the Salvation Army and give us your history, but also bring you into an important conversation facing women in leadership today. But before we do that, we do want to get to know you better. So we're going to dig deep into the life of Major DeJesus.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell us about yourself, what your current appointment is, your family, any fun recent life events and those kinds of things.
Well, currently I'm stationed at THQ. I'm in the Corn and Community Mission Department, and my specific appointment is Corps Revitalization. It's a brand new appointment. My husband also has a brand new appointment of Corps Planting, so we get to sort of create what our appointment is. So this is something new that I haven't had the opportunity to do before, but I'm very excited. With Corps Revitalization, I feel that it's my opportunity to help Corps and the members and the officers to rediscover their mission, to reengage with the mission field, and to refocus their resources to support the mission that they're doing. We just don't want to relive the past, revitalize the past. We want to invigorate the future, the present.
Mm-hmm.
We want to partner with God's mission that's here and now.
Yeah, and what an opportunity you have in such a unique position of leadership here in the Central Territory. It's exciting to hear you talk about moving forward, invigorating the present and the future of our Army. So tell us about your family.
Well, I have a beautiful family. I have a wonderful husband, Will DeJesus, and my two beautiful children. I can't believe I have adult children, but I'm holding at 35,
yeah,
so it's very interesting to have adult children. But mm-hmm. Alejandro, he will be 21 in December, and he's at Mid-America University. He's at college right now studying nursing.
Oh, wow.
He's in his third year of nursing.
Wow.
So he's excited about that and clinicals.
Yeah.
And then Michael, our youngest, he is 18. He'll be 19 in February, but he attends Olivet University. I think he's still trying to figure out his major. Technically, he's in zoology, but
oh, wow.
I think, yeah, and he always loves animals. We had a few stray creatures in our house growing up, but I think now he's interested like in screenwriting and film industry.
Wow.
So yeah, quite a difference, you know, from zoology. He's young. He's still figuring it out.
He's young. He has time. He mm-hmm. has the freedom to still figure that out.
I'm just happy he's in college and
yeah.
is, you know, wanting to pursue
yeah.
higher education. He was just like me growing up. We hated school, and it has been a struggle for 12 years. So hopefully it won't be a struggle these next 4 years, but we'll see. I think he's enjoying it so far.
Good. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that, having one child that's focused and one child that's not so much, you know?
No. No.
So give our listeners a little history. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? And how did you come to the Salvation Army?
Well, I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I grew up there all my life, and I moved around a lot in Milwaukee, so I lived in different parts of the town, but I mostly grew up on the north side of Milwaukee. Not a great side of Milwaukee, but yeah, in a rough neighborhood. But it was back during those days when you can stay out till the streetlights came on, and you know, every mother knew your mother in the neighborhood. So if you got in trouble, your mom was going to find out about it when you got home. So
and to keep you safe, as well, to look out for you,
definitely. And so, yeah, that's where I grew up. And it was an elderly next-door lady, Lily Berryman. I called her Miss Lily. Mm-hmm. And she brought me to the Salvation Army when I was 4 years old, to Milwaukee Citadel.
Wow.
And I often wonder, like, why does she bring this little four-year-old girl to church? I mean, she wasn't to a four-year-old. She was old.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
So, you know, I'm wondering, what would possess a lady to bring me to church? But she did. And I'm forever thankful that she brought me to the Salvation Army. So that's where my early days of knowing the Army. I feel like I have basically grown up in the Salvation Army. So I've enjoyed all my time there at Milwaukee Citadel, surrounded by adults that really took an interest in me, really wanted to get me involved in different activities, different types of ministries. So. Those key soldiers are still important to me in my life now. They're like family to me. Yeah. So it was good. Had some good years there.
A lot of people have that same remembrance, that the first time that they came to the Salvation Army was someone else had brought them there, either someone that already attended the Corps or the parents called and said, hey, can my kid get on your van route? So let's just be encouragers to those out there who maybe see someone in their neighborhood that could use character building or, you know, some other form of ministry that they could reach out to kids in their neighborhood that need a safe place to go or just need church.
Definitely. You know, both of my parents didn't attend the Corps. I didn't really have a good home life, you know, with my parents, and just some issues, you know, with my father and mother. So it was a good escape from that. The Sal, as we used to say, it was a safe place for me. I got involved, you know, in the music ministry and the kids programs. If I wasn't at school, I was at the Sal. And it's so important just to create those safe spaces for people, because we never know what's going on in their home. Or maybe we do, and we just need to be open to say, you know, at the Salvation Army, you can find a safe place.
Yeah.
You can find, you know, an adoptive family. You can feel a part of this core, of this church.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to make everybody, no matter how old or young they are, feel that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. Not just the kids. That's good. How did you come to know the Lord? What's your salvation experience?
Well, always attending the Salvation Army, I'm sure I probably made some early decision about accepting Christ as my Savior. I was a junior soldier. I was a Sunbeam. Memorized all the books of the Bible so I can get that free Bible with my name engraved on it. So
awesome.
I'm sure I had some kind of relationship, but it wasn't until I was 13 years old working out at Army Lake Camp. And I was led to the Lord there by an officer that just took an interest in me and saw me one day by the fountain there at Army Lake. I can picture it in my mind as if it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And she led me to the Lord. And it's funny because to work at that camp, I was 13. And in order to work there, I had to fill out an application and give my testimony of my salvation experience.
You hadn't had one yet.
No, I hadn't had one, but
goodness.
I knew what to say, knew what to write, got the job. And then that summer, accepted Christ. So, I needed to be there. I was supposed to be there that summer. And I'm so thankful that I had the opportunity to work at camp. Camp is very important. And I enjoyed the years that I went to camp, you know, as a kid and a teenager. And, so it's a special place for me, Army Lake.
I love how you said you wrote out what you thought you were supposed to say in that testimony space, but the Lord was preparing you for what was going to happen, you know, that you had to write it out. You had to actually think about it. Like God was pricking your heart at that moment.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Camp has been such an important element, an important avenue for that experience. You see kids come not really knowing what to expect. And then this was where I accepted the Lord.
Definitely.
So mm-hmm. Go camp.
Yay.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So right now, you're in Trevecca University. What is your degree of study right now?
Well, I'm finishing up my master's. I have this class and one more class to go, so I'll be done in February, but doing my master's in organizational leadership.
Great.
Yes, I'm loving it.
It's always good to continue your education.
Right. I always feel, you know, a person never gets to the point where they stop learning, mm-hmm. whether it's a higher education at a university or whether it's a certification in something. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you should ever get to the point where you think you know it all.
Yeah. So when did you know for sure that you were called to be an officer?
I think I knew in my early teen years, but I didn't want that. I was going to be a marine biologist.
Wow.
I was going to travel the world. And
that's where your son gets his zoology.
I think so. Yes. So that's what I was going to do. And I always thought my plans were bigger and better. And it was weird because I would have expected to hear God nudging me to become an officer from another officer from a Corps member. But I was at home one day, and my mom, who only went to church like for Christmas or Easter or if I was singing in some musical, she would come, you know, to support me. But she didn't come to church. But one day she says to me, you know, Cassie, I think you're going to be one of those officer people.
Oh, wow.
And I, you know, I'm looking at her like, what do you know about those officer people?
Right.
You know, you don't attend the Corps enough to know what they actually do. But she said, you know, God has had you at the Army all your life, and I think he has a bigger plan for you, and I think you're going to be an officer.
Wow.
And I'm like, whatever. Sure. But it was something I just tucked away in my mind. Yeah. But it started me thinking, okay, are my plans good? Is God's plan better, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just something I thought about but never gave much attention to until I was 19. I just brought that conversation back to my mind. I was in my room at home by myself. I think it was the first time I was just really obedient and open to hearing the Spirit speak to me. And I heard an audible voice say to me, you're going to be an officer. And I'm looking around like, who is with me in this room? No one was home.
Yeah,
I heard this voice say, you're going to be an officer. And being a shy girl, growing up in a poor family, rough neighborhoods, didn't think I was smart enough, didn't really see a lot of minorities that were officers. I didn't think I could do it, given, you know, I already had like all the cards stacked against me. Mm-hmm. But I said that day, okay, I'm going to be an officer.
Wow.
I'm going to do it. And here I am today.
Thank you for sharing that, because those personal moments that you have, that was real for you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people experience the voice of the Lord in different ways. But the fact that you remember that marked moment of the Lord speaking to you, we need to hear those things. Those things are real.
Right.
Thank you for being open about that and sharing that.
Sure.
Now, you've attended the Salvation Army as a soldier. Yes. And as an officer in the Salvation Army for roughly 30 plus years. We'll just leave it there, 30 plus. And I know you've served overseas as well, but give us a little picture of your years of ministry. What kind of leadership roles have you had in the church and in your time as an officer?
Well, at Milwaukee Citadel, you know, they always got the teens involved in something. So, you know, I was teaching Sunday school, helping with Girl Guards. I worked in the nursery, do many, you know, different types of ministry things. I also, when I was a young adult, worked in the after school program with the tutoring program there. And that was with my then boyfriend, Will. We worked together from the start. We were already working together. And
so he attended Milwaukee Citadel as well?
He started attending Racine.
Okay.
And then he moved up to Milwaukee.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So that's how you met.
Well, we had mutual friends, Pat and Denny Kroll.
Okay.
And they each told Will and I, they're like, oh, I got a boy for you. Oh. And told him, I got a girl for you. And we were both like, no,
matchmaking.
We're good. You know, he had just come to brand new to the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
He knew nothing of the Army except for thrift stores from the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And then came over to Racine with Majors Paul and Barb Logan.
Okay.
And so then with Pat and Denny Kroll living in Racine, but attending the Corps in Milwaukee.
Okay.
They had did a little love connection.
Yeah.
But if you know Denny Kroll, when he says, I've got somebody for you, you're usually safe to say, no, thank you,
yeah.
And keep moving. But when Pat said, no, we have a guy in Racine for it, I said, okay, maybe I should check it out.
Yeah. I love that you take one word over the other.
Yes, yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I interrupted you. So you're talking about...
We worked at Milwaukee Citadel in the after-school program. And then from there, because we both wanted to pursue officership, and I think it was nice that we both had our separate callings, so we could, we shared each other our testimonies with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to see how God had called him also to the Army. And so we went together to Janesville, Wisconsin to work as Corps helpers with Majors Paul and Sue Moore. And so we were with them for about a year and a half. And then we entered training in 96, and we were commissioned in 98 with the Builders of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. And the rest is history.
Wow. And you've been at the Corps?
Yes, we've had Corps appointments in the Chicagoland area.
Okay.
In Chicago at La Vita. We were DYSs in Kansas and Western Missouri Division. And then from there, we went overseas to Argentina and served in two different appointments there. And then we came back to THQ here in Chicago and then went out to the Corps again at Gateway. And now we're back at THQ.
Now, you may not remember this, but I have seen you in action as a leader back when I was the character building director in the Metro Division.
Oh, Lord. What did I do wrong?
No. This was like 18 years ago. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
You came to Girl Guard Camp, and I asked you to plan one of our evening programs. It was a campfire, but we had to move it indoors because it rained.
Okay.
So we couldn't go to the campfire. But you were like, so we'll just do it indoors. I'm like, great.
Oh, okay.
You planned one of the best indoor campfire nights. Those girls had a blast. Actually, we may have combined with the boys that night.
Wow.
But, at that same camp, I also saw you teach emblems and teach the girls. And I watched you pray with those girls at the altar. And I just was really moved about your passion for that ministry, for youth ministry.
Aww.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to transition into something a little deeper here. As you know, women in leadership are facing some pretty tough issues.
Mm-hmm.
And this is by no means anything new, and we're thankful for Catherine Booth for paving the way for us in the Salvation Army. But sometimes just when we think we've come so far,
right,
we once again take on heavy fire, and then we find that we have to be on the defense again.
Right.
And unfortunately, it even goes deeper than just being a woman in leadership. I think it's important to open up the conversation. So I'm going to ask you a tough question. In your history, serving as a woman in leadership, a minority woman in leadership, have you experienced any adversity, and how did you face that as a Christian woman?
I can't really recall or pinpoint a moment where there was a blatant adversity to me being a woman or a minority in leadership. There's been a lot of assumptions of what my ethnic background is. People look at me or they look at my last name and just assume I'm, Hispanic or Latina.
Mm-hmm.
But not that there's anything wrong with that, but I don't think they realize that I'm biracial. I'm mixed with black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of those two heritages that I come from. And I'm glad that I get to experience that from both sides, from my father's family and my mother's family, from their backgrounds, and I get to experience that. But I remember I was a teen, and I remember growing, you know, at the core, hanging out with the rest of the teens. I had a boyfriend at the time. wasn't Will, but it was a boyfriend from a marching band, and his cousin. They were both African American, and I had a friend who was white. You know, attended the core. I introduced her to my boyfriend's cousin, you know, and they started hanging out and hitting it off. And come to find out, she had to stop seeing him because her father didn't want her to date someone who was black. I think that was the first time where I was really taken aback because he was a Christian.
Right.
And I just couldn't understand how, even inside the church, we still have those prejudices.
Yeah.
I think that was the first time that I experienced being different from the kids at the core when I didn't feel that he fully accepted my friend, you know, this guy for my friend. And then I started thinking, well, how do they feel about me?
Right.
And so I think that was like the first introduction to me realizing, okay, it happens inside the church and we need to do something about it as well.
Yeah, we're not immune.
No.
You know, and we're not given a free pass either just because we are the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was a little naive. You know, I just assumed all Christians loved everyone and accepted anyone who walked through those doors.
That's how it should be.
Right.
Right. There's nothing naive about that at all. It's not reality, but that is how we should be doing things.
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, I think it was just an eye-opener for me to say, okay, you know what? Yeah, it's not all roses inside. Mm-hmm. And I just need to be observant, need to speak out for those who can't speak for themselves, and just need to continually bring out in the open that everyone belongs. Doesn't matter your economic background, your racial background, ethnic background. Everyone should be welcomed and invited, and we shouldn't have those barriers. If we're out there preaching that Jesus loves you, we love Jesus, and we want you to experience that same love, then you know, our talk better match our life.
Absolutely. So, what do you feel is the biggest challenge facing any woman in leadership today?
Well, one of my classes that I was able to take over the summer, it was called Leading in Diverse Communities. And one of the assignments that I had to do was an article review. One of the articles I chose was called Exploring Cultural Diverse Leadership Styles. And the two authors in this article state that our current leadership theories tend to, and I quote here, reflect a white, North American, heterosexual, male bias and omit dimensions of diversity in researching how leadership is exercised and the values effective leaders promote. And so in order to update our current leadership theories that we have, we will need to, as the authors state, take a hard look at existing leadership models that ignore ethnic and racial diversity. So when learning how to become an effective leader, we also want to make sure that we do not just mirror those that are already in leadership. This article continues to go on, this, and it says that when many women and members of non-white racial and ethnic groups become a part of the power elite in our organizational leadership roles, they often become more like those already in power.
Sure.
So, you know, sometimes without even realizing it, women and minorities mirror the leadership power in place because that's the only example we're given.
Right.
You know, and I struggled with this early on in my officership because I thought I had to be like that type of leader.
Right.
But it wasn't me. It wasn't staying true to my style, my skills, my abilities. And so I struggled with that. And, you know, it didn't hit me to, you know, just lead like Cassie, lead
yeah,
like yourself.
Right.
Don't try to be like the only examples we're given. So since there aren't that many women and minorities in senior leadership positions, we may tend to lead from the examples we're given,
sure.
whether it's right or wrong.
Right.
We all have so much to offer
right.
from our backgrounds, from, you know, how we were raised, just different experiences that we've gone through. We can bring that diverse uniqueness to the organization, to the Salvation Army here. Now, with all that said, I am so glad that we are talking about inviting people to the table.
Yeah.
You know, that's been a big thing here in the
yeah.
Central Territory, inviting people to feel welcomed and yeah. to the table. But I think we need to take it a step further and say, okay, if I'm invited, you
yeah.
know, to the table, will I have a voice?
Yes.
And is it okay to have a different voice from those already around the table?
Right.
So I think it's those things that we really need to look at. It's one thing to invite me, but I want to have a voice.
Yep.
And it may be different, and that's okay.
Right.
I think we're good at listening.
Yeah.
We're just not good at saying, okay, now what? Let's do something. Let's,
right.
you know, be bold. Let's take risk. Let's fail. But and learn from that and then try something else,
yes.
you know? I don't know if we're willing to take risks and calculated risk. You know,
right.
I don't mean just going out there and doing whatever, but taking those risks that will, first of all, bring honor and glory to God.
Amen.
You know, you mm-hmm. want to build his kingdom here and now on earth. And I think we need to be open
yeah.
to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be looking at how we lead this army in a different way,
yeah.
you know,
right.
being accepting of other voices at the table
yeah.
and seeing what their background, how they can influence our army for the good, you
yeah.
know.
Mm-hmm.
God has been with us for
yeah.
many years, but I think we need to start listening.
Yeah, I agree.
And doing more.
I completely agree. And we know this isn't going to be solved overnight. It may not even be solved in our time. But if the Lord has given you a voice and put this passion in your heart to make a difference or to make a change, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
But we definitely need to not only talk more openly about it, but like you said, be a part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just not let this be empty words, but what are we going to do about it?
Right. Well, even I was challenged to even do this. My husband, you know, saying you're passionate about this. We have conversations about this at home with our kids. And he said, well, if you're going to talk about this and you feel this way, then talk and speak up about it. And again, you know, I let my fears and my shyness, and I'm like, no, I'm good behind the scenes. Someone else could be the spokesperson. But I think it's time where, you know, I'd say, okay, I'm just going to speak up and
yeah.
in a, you know, respectful way, but to really be honest
yeah.
about how it is at times. You know, I'm thinking of my own kids. I'm thinking of the rest of the young people, young adults
right.
in the Army. And, you know, I want a better Army than
right.
than what I had growing up.
Yeah.
You know, like I said earlier, I never saw hardly any minority officers. Saw,
right.
you know, just Corps officers in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see any in leadership positions, I never saw that. Now, we have come a long way
mm-hmm.
from there. We, you know, some way, I guess.
Yeah.
We do have different people of color in different leadership positions
mm-hmm.
in our territory today.
Mm-hmm.
But just because we have that doesn't mean we're good and we can stop there.
Right.
Oh, we're good. We met this.
The quota.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're good. We now have women in leadership. Women, you know, have always been in leadership.
Right. Right.
And but I think we can do more.
We do better. Yeah.
You know, and especially when I look at the diversity of the army around the world. When you look at the High Council, you see the diverse army world. But then when you, especially in the United States, when you look at our leadership, you don't see that
right.
across the board. You don't see people of color at that table mm-hmm. where, you know, decisions are being made, where futures are being planned
right.
for officers and for the Army as a whole. And I think we as an Army are missing out of what those groups of individuals could bring to the table mm-hmm. if they had an opportunity to speak
yeah.
and to be listened to and to maybe pick up a few of their suggestions that
yeah.
they give.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's good. I think to remember, too, that we need to keep Christ at the center of everything that we do.
Right.
And even if we continue to face adversity, I feel like God's going to honor your efforts no matter what,
Definitely.
You know, because you're in the center of His will and you're doing what He has called you to do. In the same vein, but on a slightly lighter note, you recently attended the Salvation Army's International College for Officers in London. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your experience. And in what way did this experience give you fuel to continue on seeing all officers from all walks of life at that conference?
Well, I absolutely loved everything about being in England for 6 weeks for ICO and then stayed a little extra. So I think I was there like a total of 8 weeks.
And the dream.
I know. I miss my family terribly. It was both of my kids going to college, my youngest going for the first time, moving to a new appointment, being in Chicago, you know, for 2 weeks and then heading off for England. So
yeah.
it was like all at once, very quickly doing this. But I enjoyed ICO so much. For those who know me know that I'm usually shy and reserved when meeting new people, but I just kept praying, okay, God, I'm just going to step out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
I'm going to meet a whole bunch of different people. I'm going to do new experiences, and I just want to be open to whatever you have for me. So that really was my prayer going into ICO, and wouldn't you know it, God answered my
yeah.
prayer.
Amen.
I met so many different officers from around the world. We still keep in touch now on a regular basis through Facebook or email, you know, writing back and forth to one another. I was able to go on a prayer walk with one of my session mates, and we were able to share our prayer requests with one another and then pray for each other as we're walking around the
yeah.
neighborhood. So it's just something, you know, that those experiences just, they mark you. You
yes.
keep them in your heart,
yeah.
you know, for the rest of your life. And so I was so thankful I experienced that. But I think my favorite part of ICO was just allowing God to help me grow on my spiritual journey with Him. I've been an officer since 1998. You would think I would be okay with going to whatever appointment God and the Army has, you know, prepared for me. But I'm stubborn. So during my officership, I always wanted to have the spirit of obedience when it came, you know, time for those change of appointments. And, you know, I wanted to fully trust that God's hand was in the planning of every appointment change. And it wasn't just the Army sending me, you know, somewhere. But, you know, if I'm honest, there was always a small part of me that just wanted to keep that control, that wanted to say, you know, I know Cassie best, so I should have a say on where I go and what I do. And I was just always fearful of totally giving up that control to God. But during my time at ICO, you know, I was just able to really focus on my relationship with the Lord, just spend those quiet moments with Him and really honestly just take the opportunity to listen. Sometimes when I come before the Lord, I'm just talking, and amen, okay, I'm done. And then I forget to listen.
Right.
You know, He wants to speak to me too. And so during that time of ICO, I finally, you know, I said, I'm going to give up this control, this fear. I'm going to give it to You, Lord, and I'm just going to trust that they will have the right appointment for me. Even if it may not be where God wanted me to go, He'll work it out.
He's still in control.
Yes, He is, you know, and so there may be plans made, but God is sovereign.
That's
and
right.
So I just need to fully trust him
yeah.
and that he has a bigger and better plan
yep.
for me. And so I just kept, this course just kept coming back to me, old course, where he leads me, mm-hmm. I will follow. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go with him all the way. And I can honestly say that I'll go wherever
yeah.
because I'm going to fully trust that he has my life, my family, the people that I'm going to minister to in his
yeah.
hands. And yeah, I can't wait to see where he'll lead me in the future.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's exactly the attitude that's needed. I can relate to that as an officer's kid. You know, my parents would get their marching orders and I would be like, nope,
mm-hmm.
not going. Mm-hmm. But my mom always said that, this is bigger than you, Heather. This is bigger than us. The Lord is leading us. And don't you think if the Lord is leading us somewhere, he's going to take care of us?
Right.
And she was never wrong. It always worked out. And
right.
the Lord always had a plan and he guided us through every step. So it is hard to give up control.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
I like to know the path. I like to
right.
be able to see the outcome or have a contingency plan
mm-hmm.
for, you know,
yeah.
if there's a hiccup, I know this. Okay, then we're going to go this way around.
Right.
But sometimes you have to just blindly grab
mm-hmm.
that hand of the Lord,
yeah.
sometimes for dear life.
Yes. Yes.
And not let go and just say, okay, I can't see it, but
mm-hmm.
I'm trusting
yeah.
that you're in control. Yeah.
I think I'm like a 6 on the Enneagram.
Like,
I have a plan B for like every
yes.
possible situation. Like
yes.
I go somewhere or move somewhere and I'm like, oh my goodness, this could happen. So I got to have a plan for that.
Yep.
And
I totally
yes.
relate to that.
Yeah. You're probably a 6. Have you?
I have
you?
Taken the test. I'm a 2, but I have a 6. What do they call that? A wing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's just switch gears just a little bit. What are your current interests and your hobbies?
Well, I love reading. Right now, I'm only doing required school reading.
Mm-hmm.
But
season.
Yes. I can't wait to get back to just reading, you know,
mm-hmm.
books that I like. I love historical fiction,
ooh,
you know,
yeah.
books. I love watching movies. I love just listening to music, different types of music. I'm into podcasts.
Yeah.
I have like a ton of podcasts that
really?
I listen
what,
to.
Really? What do you, what's in your list?
Well, I listen to a lot of crime.
Really?
Like podcasts. I think I scare my husband because like I listen to like all this crime stuff. And so maybe I make him nervous, but
oh,
I listen
no.
to a lot of like Case Files
mm-hmm.
or
okay.
Undisclosed. So I listen to all those type of podcasts and prepares in there.
Yeah, good.
So I listen to that as well.
But, a little thriller, a little spiritual.
Yes, I got to get both.
Yeah, I love it.
Definitely. So, yeah, I have a lot of things. Right now, I'm just, you know, focused on new appointments,
yeah.
still trying to figure that out, trying to get used to this new season of my life of
yeah.
being an empty nester.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. And just trying to finish up school. It's like I can see the light at the end of the tunnel there. And I'm, yeah, I cannot wait to be finished.
Yeah.
It's been good.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's time.
Yeah.
yeah. It'll be great, though. You'll feel so great when you're on the other side of that and
no,
you can look
absolutely.
Back and be like, I did that. That's yep. good. Yeah.
yeah, definitely.
Who has been the biggest influence in your life?
Oh, wow. Besides Jesus?
Yes.
I don't think I have, like, one specific person.
Well, yeah, because you talked about the whole core in Milwaukee
right.
influencing you in some way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I just had people that just surrounded me. You know, my mother passed away when I was 19.
Mm.
And so when I got married to Will, she wasn't around. So
right.
the whole core came together
mm.
and provided the meal for the dinner
mm.
there with my wedding dress that helped out with bridesmaids. So, you know, when it says it takes a village,
yeah.
like it took the whole core
yeah,
to raise me.
That was your tribe.
Yep. So I have a lot of people there that, like I mentioned Pat Kroll, she's
mm-hmm.
like a mother to me
mm-hmm.
now. And so there are a lot of people, you know, in and out of my life, officers as
yeah.
well,
mm-hmm.
that have been an influence on me. So
yeah.
I can't really pinpoint one person. It's
sure.
just been a collective of people along
yeah.
the way.
Yeah. And there is such a great community in the Salvation Army,
mm-hmm.
soldiers and officers. So you always have a friend somewhere and you have someone that's going to support you. You can always count on that. So in your current appointment, are you discovering any new ways that God is using you or new passions that God has given you?
Yeah, you know, like I've mentioned, I'm at Trevecca right now online, and I can see how I've been able to apply what I've been learning in my previous appointment at Gateway and this current one here at THQ. And I can directly apply what I've been learning. I'm a hands-on visual type of person. So I like to be able to see what I'm learning, how I can use that in an everyday opportunity. I'm excited about what I've been able to use in my strategic thinking and planning classes that I've had currently for this appointment. I enjoy looking at why we do something as an organization and how we can improve in different areas and what we're doing. So I not some sound boring to some people, but I enjoy, you know, strategic thinking and everything. So, yeah, I think I was one of those kids that always said why. I always had to know why. And I remember I had a babysitter who would always, whenever I would say why, she would say, because I said so.
That's not
and
a
I hated that. And I said, when I become a mother, I'm never saying
know,
that to my kids. And then my kids would say, why? And finally I said, because I said so.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right. It's just do it.
Yes.
We all have said that.
Yes.
We all have said, I'm never saying that. And then we do.
And then we do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, so I always want to know why, you know, don't tell me we have to do it. I want to know the why so I can understand, you know. So
Right. It gives validity to what you're doing. And,
right.
Yeah. That's good. Well, it has been such a pleasure talking to you today, Major. Thank you for your willingness to share from your heart. I think that you are an example of courage and strength to us, and I've been convicted by what you have shared, and you certainly have given us a lot to think about and pray about as we stand up for what we're called to do. So thank you for opening that conversation for us, and hopefully we will be able to discuss more in the future. Hopefully you'll be a part of that table.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for giving me this platform to share from my heart. You know, it's sometimes a struggle to share from the heart. You don't know how it's going
vulnerable.
To be received or but I think God, you know, is speaking not just to me but to many many others, and I think We all need to start speaking out, speaking in love to one another about this subject, and really just allowing God to do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
You know, don't be afraid to shake it up,
yes.
to, you know, do something different out of the box, and to get others involved and not just have the same army that I experienced growing up. I want it different for my kids, for their kids.
Yeah.
You know, I want it different for them.
Yeah. Well said. Well, we want you to know that we are going to be praying for you and your family as you continue your ministry here in the Central Territory. And we are so blessed to have you and your husband serving here.
Thank you.
So thanks again for joining us today, Cassie. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Major DeJesus today. I appreciate her boldness to open up on a tough conversation with such poise and grace. I am also so grateful for her friendship. Listeners, we hope you leave today feeling prepared and equipped for tomorrow. Thanks for listening. God bless you today.